I was supposed to, I've got a couple of announcements first. I was supposed to let you know that my talk on technology yesterday, the technologist missed the first 10 minutes. Technology sometimes fails. But he assured me that what he was going to do was just record the first 10 minutes of tonight, splice them together, and call it good. Also, just sort of earlier today, I spoke with Edgar Merrihue. Some of you may remember him. He used to live kind of in these parts. And he didn't know I was here. He just called for another reason. But when he found out I was in Iowa, he said, "Oh, please tell everybody hi." Then he goes, "There's probably nobody still around that remembers me." I said, "No, Edgar, there's a lot of people up there still remember you." So he said to say hi, but he called. I'll just let those of you that know him and Veronica. Veronica is not well. She's had, over the past few months, she's had a series of TIAs, and they can't figure out exactly what's going on. He finally decided just to take her home, and she's resting, and they're doing more testing and trying to figure out what's happening. But that's what he was calling me about, and I decided just to share that. He didn't ask me to share that, but I know some of you, for some of you, they're as dear in your hearts as they are in Jill and I, so I just wanted to pass that along. We're going to be spending some time this evening talking about church government. It's going to come at kind of a different angle. There was a specific part of the idea about church government that I was asked to address. And that part is, how do you deal with an eldership that you don't appreciate or agree with? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But we are going to do just a little bit of groundwork. Some of it was already done. Our lessons, John Lee's lesson and mine, are going to overlap quite a bit. But I do want to very quickly just set some groundwork and some reminder. First, the responsibilities of an eldership to the members. It's hard to discuss whether an eldership is not doing their job if we don't talk first a little bit about what their job is. And I want to address that from the perspective of the different terms. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because I know it's fairly familiar probably to most of us. The different terms that are used in the New Testament to describe an elder are also descriptive of his work. And I think that's important. And we're, like I said, we're not going to turn to all of these, but for example, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 17, Paul sends for the elders at the church at Ephesus. And that word, elder, is the word presbyteros, and it means an elder in age or rank. And the concept of that term, as used back then, was the idea that they would speak for or represent whoever they were. An elder of the tribe of Levi spoke for the tribe of Levi, for example, or whatever tribe might be. And in this case, with the church, the elder is the one that is to represent and speak for the church, the congregation. In that same chapter, in Acts chapter 20, verses 30 through 31, Paul's still talking, going back just a second, so it's important that Paul called for the spokespeople of the church. Do you notice that? Okay, I didn't want that to pass by unsaid. Then in Acts chapter 20, down in verse 28 through 31, Paul uses the word to describe their job as episkopos. Okay, and that is an overseer or one that sees that things are done right. That's how it was used, sort of like a manager or an overseer. So they are to oversee the workings of the congregation, to delegate authority as needed, to organize things, and to coordinate actions that the congregation is going to take. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, when Paul lists the qualifications for an elder, he starts out by calling that individual a bishop, an episcope, which is related to the idea of an overseer, but it speaks more to their responsibility in church matters, their responsibility to be in charge of church matters. Two more, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, Peter uses the word pomeno. Don't get me on the Greek pronunciation because I'm not a Greek scholar. That's not my forte. And that is the idea of to tend or to feed or to keep sheep. So the idea there is protection, spiritual protection, sustenance, and guidance. An elder is to feed the flock, is to take care of the spiritual needs of the flock. And the last one that I'll bring up is in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11, when Paul talks about the gifts, lists the gifts that Christ gave the church, he lists elders. Poimen is the word he uses, and it's a herdsman or one who protects the sheep, so it's related to a shepherd, but speaks to their responsibility to protect and care for the sheep. So that's the job of an elder. That's what they're supposed to be doing, all right? Now, that doesn't mean that there are not any responsibilities for the sheep. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 7, I'm going to turn there and read this one. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 7, remember those who rule over you, have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. This is a command to remember them. So how is it that we as sheep can remember the eldership, the leaders? We can pray for them on a regular basis. Even if they haven't asked for prayers, we can still remember them and their work and their duties. We can encourage them. It was brought up that elders, and this is correct, elders once in a while need to give an attaboy to the members that they're doing a good job. Well, the elders need to reciprocate that if the members do. If the elders are doing a good job, the members need to let the elders know that they're doing a good job. And we can offer assistance. Okay, we can offer assistance. You may not know that something needs to be done, but they might. All right? You might know something that needs to be done that they don't. So you should tell them about it, ask them about it, and offer them assistance in accomplishing that. We should honor them. Honor their leadership, honor their instruction, honor their example. We should now, not to put them on a pedestal where they don't belong, but we should appreciate them for the work that they're doing. I agree with what John said. If we could have everybody be an elder for 2 years, it would change the way that you think about the eldership. Because a lot of times the things that they do go on in a background that most of us are never aware of. And there's a lot of stress and pressure there. In that same chapter, Hebrews chapter 13, down in verse 17, we're told, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls, and as those who must give an account, let them do so with joy and not with grief. That would be unprofitable for you. We're commanded to obey and to submit to them because they are looking out for us. If they're doing their job, their goal is to help us out. And this is a serious issue for them. A very serious issue, and it weighs heavily. So we should help them every chance we get, and the way the writer of Hebrews describes it is we should make their leadership a joy. The easiest way to make their eldership a joy, their leadership a joy, is to not add to their burden. They already have a burden. They don't need more burden. If I can do anything to help their burden, that's what I should be doing. Whether that's in my personal life, whether that's in assisting them in some way, or even helping other members of the congregation. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, Peter says, For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. We're all supposed to be examples to each other. As a member, we're supposed to be an example to the elders. As an elder, we're supposed to be an example to the members. As members, we're supposed to be examples to one another. As members of the church, we're supposed to be examples to those in the world. We are always supposed to be acting as an example. So with that said, that little bit of background, I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page, thinking alike. I want to discuss really quickly some red flags. Things that we might see in an eldership that might cause some concern, might cause us to think, maybe I need to be looking at this situation a little deeper. Okay? The first thing that I thought of that we should pay attention to that perhaps could be a problem and is a problem, maybe not in our circles, in our churches, but I see it sometimes outside, elders that are overstepping their bounds. Now, elders have a lot of responsibility, but there is a limit to the responsibility that they have. Elders are charged with the care and feeding and organization and everything among the church that they are appointed over, and only that congregation. If an elder begins to reach out and try to control or talk about, whether it's by leadership or by force, something that's going on in another congregation, that could be a red flag. Now, certainly they can offer advice or consultation to members or elders that are from a different congregation, but that should be done by the eldership very carefully and with a lot of prayer and consideration. They may need to send a letter negating a false teacher that has gone out from their number. We see this in the New Testament, don't we? The eldership found out there was a false teaching going on, that the ones doing the false teaching, it came from their group, and they wanted to make sure that they sent a letter behind them saying, wait a minute, that's not right. And we know that's not right, and we don't advocate that that thought. But they cannot, however, oversee another congregation from afar. They can't. Now, some of you may be thinking, I don't see how that would be possible. Well, I've seen it. I've seen it. In a congregation that we attended when I was got my first teaching job, the congregation there, long story short, there was a group in another state, a congregation I had no knowledge of, no understanding of, had no idea anybody that went there. The eldership there was overseeing the man that was there that was trying to fill the role of a preacher. Now, I'm an evangelist, and I have oversight. The eldership at Excelsior Springs is my oversight. But if I was in another congregation, if I moved out of state, they wouldn't be controlling that congregation. That's what this other congregation was trying to do. It was trying to force issues and control what was happening in that congregation. So it can occur. And that can be a red flag. That can be a way that an elder is overstepping their bounds. So the second way, elders that are overstepping their bounds, are also, the second way is elders that are abdicating leadership to others. And that could come in many different forms. It could be that they're giving all the teaching responsibilities to one individual. To me, that would be abdicating their leadership. They're letting that individual control everything that's going on in the congregation. You know, another way would be always going along with the majority. There's elders that, when they have a hard decision to make, they take a poll of the congregation, and whatever majority wins, there we go. That's the direction we're going to go. Now, that doesn't mean that the opinions of the congregation, that they shouldn't keep up and take the temperature and see what's going on and what the wishes and desires of the congregation are, but just because the majority rules does not mean the majority is correct. The elder has to step up and make the choice. Always going along with one or more other congregations. Well, I know congregation such and such is a good congregation and it's a strong eldership, so we'll just do whatever they do. No, that's not good either. It may be that that's the right thing to do, but we shouldn't do it just because they did it. We should do it because we've looked at it and figured out that that's the right thing. Remember, though, that a good leader will delegate. Moses found that out the hard way, didn't he? A good leader will delegate, but he will not abdicate. And that's an important distinction. The third thing I can think of, and the last thing we'll talk about, as far as some red flags, is an elder that is participating in continual sin. Now, we have to understand that elders cannot be expected to be perfect any more than the members are. They're going to fall. They're going to sin. They're going to make mistakes because they're not perfect. Okay? However, as an elder, they're in a position that their sin can carry extra consequences beyond that of some of the members. How are non-members going to view the church if that sin is known in the community? What about the example that they're setting for other members within the church? They're supposed to be an example, but not an example of evil, but an example of good. How is it going to affect their ability to help others who may be caught up in a sin of some kind? It's going to help them if they can say, here's how I overcame it. It's not going to help them if they say, well, you know what, I can't figure that one out either, so good luck. So a continual sin in the life of an elder could be an issue that might have to be thought about. So if there are problems, because elders aren't perfect, if there are things that can go wrong in an eldership, the question becomes, what should we do? What should we do if we think there is a problem with the eldership or an elder? Well, the first thing I think we need to do is remember Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. Paul writes there, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another. Even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do." John Morris spoke to this yesterday in one of his lessons when he talked about the idea that is it sin or is it preference? Is it really something that's wrong or is it just something you don't like? Because if it's really something that's wrong, it needs to be dealt with. If it's a matter of preference or opinion, get over it. Right? Deal with it and move on. Talk to the person, explain yourself, but it might not change. Okay? In that process, we have to exhibit all of those things that Paul just talked about. Meekness, humility, kindness, tender mercy. For the purpose, if we have something against somebody else, being what? To forgive them. To forgive them how? To forgive them like Jesus forgave me. That's the depth of the forgiveness that needs to be there. So the first thing we should do is shine our light. Okay? To be kind, to be merciful, and to be forgiving. We have to keep that in mind all the time in every situation. The second thing we have to do is to make sure that the accusation is true. Confirm it somehow. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 19, Paul suggested to Timothy, "Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. You might not know the whole story." That's right. It's possible that you're wrong. It's possible that I'm wrong. I might not be seeing the whole picture. I might have overheard a little piece of a conversation and assumed the wrong thing. I might have seen something that was not really what was going on. Or I might have seen or heard something that I put my own bias in on. That's not really the truth. You know, one of the most interesting things that I hear elders talk about when they talk to me about the difficulties that they're having or problems or struggles, one of the biggest things is this. I had fill-in-the-blank so-and-so member come to me complaining because we weren't doing anything about such-and-such that was going on, but we were. We were. We've been dealing with it for months. We just couldn't tell them. It wasn't appropriate to talk to the congregation yet about it. So maybe that person, instead of complaining, could have gone to the eldership and said, Did you know such and such was going on? Is there something I can do to help address it? That would give them the opportunity to say, we appreciate you. Thank you for helping out. If we need your assistance, we will, but we've been trying to handle this for the last few months, and we'll let you know. See, it gives you a chance to find out what's really going on. However, sometimes steps must be taken. Sometimes something needs to be done. In Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, Paul comes across the situation that Peter is not behaving honorably or righteously. He's contradicting his own teaching on how you should treat a Gentile that's become a Christian. See, when the Jews weren't there from Jerusalem, he ate with them, he talked with them, it was no big deal. They were brothers. But when the Jews from Jerusalem came up, he acted differently. He treated them differently. And Paul saw that. And if you remember, it says others were carried away with that same sin. Others. He was influencing others. Remember, Peter was an apostle, but he was also an elder, wasn't he? I who am a fellow elder, Peter said. So here's Paul that has come across an elder that is being a hypocrite. We don't like to talk about Peter that way, but it was the truth at the moment. He was acting like a hypocrite and he was dragging other people into his sin. Even Barnabas, it says. Even Barnabas. So what did Paul do? He tells the brethren at Galatia that he confronted him to his face. He didn't go talk behind his back. He didn't go back to Jerusalem and tell the church at Jerusalem what Peter was doing. He went straight to Peter and said, this ought not to be. And addressed it head on. So sometimes a confrontation must be made. But when that confrontation must be made, it must also be handled in the correct way. It has to be. Okay, and Jesus is very, very plain on the way that we should handle situations when we have an issue with somebody else. In Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 through 17, we're very familiar with it, I'm sure. He says, you go to that person and you talk to them. That's first step, not the last step. That's not two or three steps down the line. That's the very first thing you do. You try to clear it up one-on-one. That's what Paul did, isn't it? Paul did exactly what Jesus had told him to do. Talk to them directly. That's going to clear up a lot of things. Maybe there is a problem. And just confronting the person about it, whether it's an elder or a member, is going to help deal with the problem. So maybe that's going to solve the situation, but at the very least, it's going to clear up any misideas or misconstrued concepts that are happening. If I'm wrong, I'm going to find out about it real quick. But when I do that, I also have to do that in love, in mercy, in forgiveness, with the right attitude. It can't be done like a gotcha moment. We shouldn't be sitting around waiting for the elder to mess up. Because I remember when he confronted me about something, and I'm just going to wait until I can confront him too. No. There's no love in that. There's no mercy. There's no kindness. There's no gentleness. That's selfishness. That's pride. We shouldn't handle it that way. We should have grace and mercy and love and forgiveness. Then, after we have talked to that person, hopefully that fixes it. But Jesus said sometimes that won't fix it, so if they won't listen to you then, take somebody with you. Now, I don't know that this is necessary all the time, but it's always my suggestion to somebody that's trying to help somebody through a sin, if they've talked to them and it's time to take somebody, who should I take? Well, let's see. Why don't you take an elder? Why don't you take a couple of elders? Well, if it's an elder that's the sin, it needs to be confronted, and they haven't listened the first time, take another elder. Take another elder. It's possible that when you go and talk to that elder about needing to confront the other elder, the second elder, will say, you know what, we're talking about that. Go with me, and then he'll know we both know. It might help it along. But my suggestion is take another elder, or maybe a couple of elders. But Jesus says, if they won't listen to you one-on-one, if they won't listen when you take somebody else to help you out, Jesus' third step is bring it before the church. Take it before the body. Now this is where with an eldership it can get tricky. This is just a matter of personal preference. This is just a matter of opinion. So you take it for what you think. But I think that this should be handled no matter whether it's an elder, a deacon, an evangelist, another member. Doesn't matter who it is. It's my personal thought that this, bringing it before the congregation, should be done by an elder. They're the leaders of the flock. They're the spokesmen for the church. They're the ones that are in charge. And hopefully they have the maturity, they have the wisdom to handle it properly. To handle it with grace and love and mercy and not out of vengeance or anger. So, remember these basic principles. We have to confirm that the concern is real. That we're not just imagining something. We have to discuss the situation privately with the elder. If the situation is not alone, take somebody with you. Perhaps another elder would be best. If the situation is not resolved, have the other elder that you brought with you bring it before the church. But always remember to do all things with love and respect. Because that's how we're supposed to treat the elders. With love and respect. Show the love of Christ in the whole process with mercy and forgiveness. Forgiving as Christ forgave us. And always, always, always consider how you would want that elder to confront you if the situation was reversed.